Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver. Welcome to the podcast. It is Saturday, July 2, 2016. Today, John Russell and I step back in time on a national park visit in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dan Friedel also joins us with What's Trending Today. And, of course, we end the podcast with a classic American story. We hear From the Cabbie's Seat by O. Henry. But first, we hear a report about British singer Adele. Here is Marcia James.
Hello. It's me.
British singer Adele opens a series of shows in the United States this week in the small city of St. Paul, Minnesota. 300,000 people live in St. Paul, but it is part of a larger metropolitan area that is home to more than 3 million people. It is on the east side of the Mississippi River, across from Minneapolis. The two are often called the Twin Cities. The city of St. Paul has recognized the importance of Adele's visit. It took this chance to make fun of the competitiveness between the two cities. The St. Paul Visitors and Convention Bureau produced a marketing video using Adele's song, Hello, but with different lyrics. The singers in the video urge people to visit the east side of the river.
Hello, it's me. Older twin of Minneapolis, a place you got to see. We have changed most everything. We are the center of it all. Welcome to glorious St. Paul. Hello.
They describe all the fun things that people can do there. Hard to know what might draw those on the west side over the river more. A funny video, or the real Hello singer herself. The tickets for the concert and the rest of Adele's tour, however, sold out last December. Adele will play again in St. Paul July 6. Then she leaves Minnesota for 3 performances in the big city of Chicago, Illinois. Adele's most recent album, 25, was released in November of last year. It spent 10 weeks at the top of Billboard magazine's list of best-selling albums. Now, Billboard reports the album is climbing the charts again after its June 24th release on streaming services. Industry experts expect the album to sell as many as 37,000 digital copies by June 30th. That would put it back in the top 10. Several of the album's songs, including When We Were Young, were released as singles on streaming services earlier this year.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is wild. feel like home. You're like a dream come true.
Adele is an expert breakup song writer. She told the New York Times newspaper that she knows she has written a good song when it makes her cry. But other people's songs make her cry too. In a People magazine interview, Adele told about the songs of heartbreak that move her. One is I Can't Make You Love Me from Bonnie Raitt's 1991 hit album Luck of the Draw. Raitt sings, I can't make you love me if you don't. You can't make your heart feel something it won't. Adele will perform in more than 15 U.S. cities during her tour in the country. She spends the most time in Los Angeles and New York. Her last appearance will be in Houston, Texas, in November. I'm Marcia James.
This is what's trending today. The movie Finding Dory is one of the most popular currently playing in the United States. It is the sequel to the successful film from 2003 called Finding Nemo. It is an animated movie about a fish named Dory who is looking for her parents. Disney made Finding Dory with very young children in mind. Most of the people who attend the movie are parents and young children. Before Finding Dory, however, a theater in California played the trailer for a different film by mistake. It is a film for grown-ups called Sausage Party. Sausage Party is an animated movie about what happens to the food we buy in the grocery store once we get it home. Even though it is a cartoon, it has a lot of adult jokes and is not for children. In the movie, sausages, bread, carrots, and potatoes all have voices and personalities. The food items are friends in the grocery store. They talk about how excited they will be when a shopper buys them and brings them home. But the vegetables, peanut butter, and spaghetti do not know they will later be eaten by humans. Some of the scenes in the trailer used words that parents did not want their children to hear. Other scenes showed the death of food items, like a potato that screams as it is peeled before being dropped into boiling water. The news about the theater's mistake came out in late June. The vice president of the movie theater, located near Oakland, California, apologized. The theater has multiple screens, he said. Finding Dory was so popular, the theater scheduled a last-minute showing in a theater that had been playing a movie made for adults. The Sausage Party trailer was supposed to be shown before a different movie, not with Finding Dory. After the news came out, The grown-up version of the Sausage Party trailer is up to 8.5 million views on YouTube. The version of the trailer that is safe for all ages now has almost 1 million views. One person enjoyed hearing about the mistake. That is actor Seth Rogen, whose voice is in Sausage Party. He wrote, "This made my day." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
This week, our U.S. National Parks journey takes us to the eastern city of Philadelphia, an important place in American history. Philadelphia sits along the Delaware River in the northeastern state of Pennsylvania. Philadelphia, often called Philly, served as the nation's capital from 1790 to 1800. Earlier, it was the capital of the American colonies during the War for Independence from Britain. Philadelphia became the central meeting place for the men who created the United States government. The buildings where the founders worked still stand in an area called the Old City. The National Park Service protects much of Philadelphia's Old City. In honor of America's 240th Independence Day, we visit the birthplace of the United States, Independence National Historical Park.
The National Historical Park is 22 hectares. It covers 20 city blocks of Philadelphia's historic area. Within these city blocks are some of the most important places in American history. The main site in the park is Independence Hall. It is here that colonial leaders declared independence from Britain. Later, they debated the creation of a government for the new country and signed the U.S. Constitution. The building that is now Independence Hall was completed in 1753. It was originally the site of Pennsylvania's colonial government. But 22 years later, Independence Hall would become the site of something much bigger.
The Pennsylvania legislature loaned its assembly room to those in the Second Continental Congress in May of 1775. The Second Congress included delegates from the 13 colonies. The men gathered just weeks after gunshots fired in Massachusetts marked the start of the Revolutionary War. The Congress prepared for war. It also approved George Washington as the first commander-in-chief of the new army. And the men worked to produce a statement of American independence from Britain. On July 2nd, 1776, they voted to approve the resolution for independence. On July 4th, they approved a document written by five of the founders, including Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams. That document was the Declaration of Independence. It includes these famous words: We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. During the summer of 1787, the assembly room had another important use. Delegates held a federal convention there and wrote the U.S. Constitution.
National Park Service guides will take visitors through the assembly room where the two historical documents were signed. It is a popular place among tourists. Visitors must order entrance tickets ahead of their visit. Today, the assembly room also displays important relics of American history. The Liberty Bell arrived from England in the middle 1700s. It was to hang at the Pennsylvania State House, but the bell cracked soon after it arrived. So, in 1753, it was melted and reformed. The new bell was rung many times for public announcements, including the signing of the Declaration of Independence. In the 1830s, a group that was trying to ban slavery in the United States began calling it the Liberty Bell. On it are words from the Christian holy book, the Bible. They read, "Proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." In 1846, the Liberty Bell cracked again. No one knows why. The Liberty Bell has not been rung since. It remains cracked and still serves as an important national symbol.
About 2 million people visit Independence National Historical Park each year. They come to view history, celebrate independence, and walk in the footsteps of the nation's founders. Reminders of these men can be found all over the park, from the statue of George Washington in front of Independence Hall to the Benjamin Franklin Museum.
From the cabbie's seat. The cabbie has his own special place from which he looks at life. His view of people is simpler, perhaps, than the view of a man who does any other kind of work. From the high seat of his cab, he looks down upon everybody. People are not important to him unless they wish to go somewhere. Then, they're only something to be carried from one place to another. You may be the president or you may be no one, but to a cabbie, you are only a fare, only someone who rides in his cab for a price. You get into his cab, he shakes you a while, and he puts you down. Then the time for payment has arrived. If you pay him the lawful amount and no more, you can easily see what he thinks of you. He thinks you're less than nothing. If you discover suddenly that you have no money with you, you'll wish you were dead. It is probably true that the cabbie's view of life is formed by the shape of his cab. He sits up there on his seat high as a god. The seat is small. No one shares it with him. While you are in his cab, your future is in his hands. You are helpless. The cab shakes you. You can't get out until he stops his horse. If you want to speak to him,
You must talk through a little hole in the back of the cab. In a cab, you no longer feel like a person. You may be someone very important, but in a cab, you're no more than something in a box being carried from one place to another. One night, there were sounds of pleasure and joy in the big house beside McGarry's family restaurant. The sounds seemed to come from the rooms of the Walsh family. A crowd of interested neighbors stood outside the door. Again and again, a waiter came bringing food or drink from the restaurant. The neighbors stood aside every time to let him pass. Then they would move near the door again. And all the time they were talking about what was happening inside. Anyone who listened would have learned quickly and easily that Nora Walsh was being married. After some time had gone by, the happy people started coming out the door. They mixed at once with the neighbors who were standing there. Joyful cries and laughing voices rose in the night air. All this noise was born of the drinks from McGarry's restaurant. At the edge of the street stood Jerry O'Donovan's cab. No cleaner or more shining cab could be found. And Jerry's horse! I tell you, he was fat with good food. Among the moving crowd, Jerry's high hat could now and then be seen. His nose, too, could be seen. It was thick and red, for it had been beaten by fares who wanted to fight. And also now and then, his fine green coat appeared. It was easy to see that Jerry had had more than enough to drink. Everyone had noticed it. Out of the crowd in the street, or perhaps from among the people walking past the house, came a young woman. She stopped beside the cab. Jerry saw her there. A fare! He made a sudden move, and three or four people near him fell down. He himself? No. He caught himself in time and did not fall. Quickly, he went up to his seat. When he was there, he was safe. All of McGarry's drink could not throw him down from there. "Step in, lady," said Jerry. The young woman stepped into the cab. The door closed. The crowd on the street jumped away. The horse started, and the fine cab rolled down the street. The horse went fast at first, but after a little time he went more slowly. Then Jerry called down through the hole in the back of the cab. He tried to make his voice soft. He wished to please. "Where will you be going to?"
"Any place you wish,"
was the answer. The voice was happy. It sounded like music. "Ah, she's riding for pleasure," thought Jerry. Then he said, "Take a trip in the park, lady. It will be cool and fine."
"Just as you wish,"
answered the fare pleasantly. The cab turned towards Fifth Avenue, then went north on that perfect street. Jerry was moved up and down in his seat and from one side to the other. McGarry's drinks moved at the same time and seemed to rise inside his head. He began to sing. Inside the cab, the fare sat up straight on the seat. She looked to the right and to the left at the lights in the houses. It was dark inside the cab, and her eyes were shining like stars. When they came to 59th Street, Jerry was half asleep, but his horse went through the park gate. The horse knew where they were. The horse pulled the cab into the park every night. And the fare sat there as if in a happy dream. She could smell the clean, fresh smell of green leaves and flowers. And the wise animal pulling the cab moved as usual. He was at home here. Jerry, too, tried to do as he did every night. His voice was thick, but he asked the questions that cabbies always ask in the park. "You want to stop at the casino restaurant, lady? I had something to eat. Listen to the music. Everyone stops."
"I think that would be nice," said the fare.
They made a sudden stop at the door of the restaurant. The cab door opened. The fare stepped out. At once she seemed caught by the wonderful music. The lights and the colors were bright, almost blinding. Someone put a piece of paper into her hand. On it was a number, 34. She looked around and saw her cab. It was 20 yards away, taking its place in a line with other waiting cabs. She was led inside and soon was seated at a table. She realized that she was expected to buy something. She had a little money. She counted it and found enough to buy something cold and fresh to drink. There she sat, drinking slowly and looking at everything around her. Life here had new color, a new shape. It did not seem real. It was like a beautiful dream. At 50 tables sat people who looked to her like kings and queens. She thought their clothes and jewels were wonderfully rich. And now and then, one of these people would look at her. They saw a small woman in a simple dress. They saw a plain face. But on that face, they saw an expression of love of life. And the queens wished that they could look the same. While she sat there, 2 hours passed. The kings and queens began to leave. Their cabs rolled away. The music ended. The waiters took everything off the tables near hers. She was sitting there almost alone. Jerry's fare stood up and held out the numbered piece of paper.
"Is someone going to give me something for this?"
she asked. A waiter told her that it was for her cab. He said that she should go to the door and give it to the man there. This man took it and called the number. Only 3 cabs stood in line now. The driver of one of them went and found Jerry asleep inside his cab. Jerry spoke a few words in anger and then went up to his seat. He turned the horse and the cab rolled to the door and stopped. His fare entered. The cab turned again and went through the cool darkness of the park, following the street that would lead most quickly to the gate. At the gate, Jerry began suddenly to think. He was still half asleep, but there was a doubt in his mind. There were 1 or 2 things he had to ask about. He stopped his horse, and his voice came down through the hole in the back of the cab. "I want to see $4 before we go any further. Have you got any money?"
$4? Laughed the fare softly. "No, I've only got a few cents with me."
Jerry made the horse run. The animal's feet were very loud on the street, but above the noise of the horse's feet, Jerry's voice could be heard. He was full of anger. He shouted at the stars in the sky. He shouted at other cabs as they passed. His words were so bad that another driver hearing them could not believe his ears. But Jerry knew what he was going to do about this fare without money. He knew where he was going. At the building with the green lights beside the door, he pulled his horse to a stop. He opened the cab door and jumped to the ground. "Come on, you," he said, and his voice was hard. His fare came out with the dreaming smile still on her plain face. Jerry took her by the arm and led her inside. He was going to tell the cops what had happened. They would do something about it. A gray-haired cop looked across the table. He and the cabbie were no strangers. Jerry began in his loud, hard voice, "I've got a fare here that..." Jerry stopped. He put his hand, reddened by the weather, to his face. The drink from McGarry's restaurant no longer clouded his mind so darkly. "A fare, sir," he continued with a wide smile, "that I want you to meet. It's my wife that I married at Old Man Walsh's this evening. And a wild time we had, it's true. Shake hands with him, Nora, and we'll go home." Before stepping into the cab again, Nora took a long, deep breath.
"I've had a very nice time, Jerry," said she.
And that's all for the Learning English Weekend this Saturday. Mario Ritter joins us tomorrow for the Sunday edition. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for joining us.
It's music